How many of you know the Christmas story? Some of you never heard this before? Or just, it's so obvious that you just don't raise your hand. Does everyone know the Christmas story? Well, then why tell it? Well, the hard thing this morning is to tell a story that you already know and try to find something that you haven't seen before. So I thought before we would get into what I feel the Lord gave me, wasn't what I was going to say, but this week, we do quiz. How's that sound? When our kids were small, we'd start telling the story. They'd be like, oh, we know this, we know this. So I wrote a quiz. I wrote a test, and I made them take it. So I'm not going to make you take it, but I have a few questions, may I ask? And I have a microphone for your answers. So if I owe you, I'm coming to you. I'm trying to think. Now, these questions are easy, and we may even involve kids if there's one that wants to participate. All right, here's Jim Watkins. You won't even look at me, will you? He won't even look at you. I love this. I know, don't make eye. All right, then I'll get down. There you go, right here. Okay, Jim, what is the name of the elderly couple who became the parents of John the Baptist?
Zechariah and Elizabeth.
Oh, man, he nailed it. Oh, my goodness. All right, we got to move along here now. Mark. Oh, man. All right. How far into her pregnancy was Elizabeth when Mary conceived?
A long way.
Anybody know?
6 months.
Say it.
6 months.
Yes. All right. All right. All right, Alex, yeah, can't hide from me, baby. There are four angels that appear throughout the Christmas story. From the beginning to the end, there are four angels appear, yet we know the name of only one. What is it?
Gabriel,
he's got it right. All right, now, who were the four characters that the angels came and visited? You don't have to tell me all of them, but just tell me the name. I'm going to hand the mic to somebody. Tell me the name of one. Here's Roger. Yeah, man, I owe you, brother. The name of one character or characters visited by an angel.
Steve?
Say it.
Shepherds.
Shepherds, there's one. Give me another one. Can you give me another one?
No.
No? JD?
I'm going to phone a friend.
Okay. Mary.
Mary, that's two. Give me one more. One more.
Joseph.
Joseph, you got it, you guys. Wow, man, oh man. Give yourself a hand. My word. According to the prophet or the writer Matthew, five times what happened didn't just happen, it was to fulfill the prophets. That's what Matthew said five times. Dave Smith, which prophets?
All of them?
Just Micah. Give me one. Micah is one.
Isaiah.
Yes. All right. Give yourself a hand, you guys. Wow. Man, that is awesome. All right, sometimes when you tell the Christmas story, what strikes you is a person, a character stands out. Sometimes, and Ethan talked about that 2 weeks ago, sometimes what strikes you is a place. And Emily talked about that last week, like Bethlehem. And sometimes what strikes you is a phrase. So this week, what stood up and introduced itself and changed my direction is this phrase in Luke chapter 2, verse 6, where it says, "And while they were there, the time came for her to deliver the child." And while they were there, where? Bethlehem, the time came for her to deliver the child. Now, I know that doesn't strike you as strange, but literally in the Greek, it reads like this. And it so happened that while they were there, the days were fulfilled. She became full term. And time to deliver the child. When I saw it, I thought, wait a second, nothing just happens in this story. And yet that's exactly what Luke said. And so it happened that while they were there, the time came, the days were full, so she could deliver the child. Well, I looked it up. And that phrase, agoneto, occurs 8 times in the first 1.5 chapters. So the way Luke tells the story, this is just sort of happening. So for instance, it says, it so happened that Zechariah's division was on duty in the temple when the angel appeared and said, your wife is going to have a child. And so when he went home, it just happened that she became pregnant. And I thought, well, that was convenient. It says at the beginning of Luke chapter 2, it so happened in the days of Caesar Augustus that the Roman government, the Senate, declared a tax. And then later on it says, and so it happened that while they were in Bethlehem responding to that tax, she became full term and delivered the child. And I thought to myself, well, what is it? Is this stuff just happening the way Luke says it was, or is God behind it? And the answer, of course, is yes. Two things appear true throughout the Christmas story that you know so well. One of them is that God is in control. He does whatever he wants. Agreed? The other is that somebody else is in control, doing whatever they want. Agreed? When I say God is in control, I mean he thinks, he decides, he speaks, even when no one's around to hear it. And when he speaks, it happens just like he wants it. And so the four angels who appear to the characters in the story, none of them come asking. These are not invitations. Hey, Mary, what do you think? Hey, shepherds, do you want to go? None of this is an invitation. Every time the angel is telling the characters what will happen, and they're even telling them how they're going to feel about it. Zechariah, you're an old guy, and your wife's a couple years younger, say in your 70s, early 80s, and your wife is going to become pregnant, and, oh, Zechariah, you're going to love this. This will be a moment of joy. And the angel seems to not care what the collateral damage might be. I mean, if you're 75 years old and you're still getting up in the night because the child can't sleep, that ain't joy. There's some serious drama going on there. If you're a pregnant teenage girl, how do you think your parents feel about this pregnancy? Despite your story, we are never told about Mary's parents. And yet they had to feel something, didn't they? But the angel seems not to focus on this. The angel just says, the Lord has decided, and this is what's going to happen. And all of it happens because it was prophesied that way. You see what I mean? God is in control. On the other hand, it appears from time to time like it's actually the humans who are driving the story. Mary and Joseph will go to Bethlehem, but not because the prophet said so. It's because the Romans want more money. So it's the tax that seems to drive them to the place the prophet said they would be. And the child will come out of Egypt, not because he's coming back from vacation, but because an ego of a madman king is involved, and that's what drove him there in the first place. The woman will conceive miraculously, but once she conceives, it will take all 9 months. You say, of course. No, God can do anything. Why would one who miraculously conceives the child a moment later subject himself to the process of pregnancy? Two things appear true to me. One is that God is in control, and the other is that other people are in charge. How can this be? And why is it so important to you this morning? Some years ago, after we moved here, a couple from a class took us down to Indy to a thing called improv theater. Have you seen this? Yeah, have you seen it? It's the Whose Line Is It Anyway kind of show about 40, 50 years ago. It's someone stands up and starts to play, and somebody plays off of what they're saying. And the beauty of improv theater is that even though the story, the plot, has been handed to the actors, one actor doesn't ever know what the other one's going to do, and you have to play off of it. And so they called people up from the audience, and they said, here's the situation. And then the audience had to get involved in the play. We had to participate on stage. Oh, man, that's a fate worse than death. You have no idea what the other person's going to say, but when they say it, you got to think of something really fast, because it's spontaneous and it's random. It feels very chaotic, and so it's terrifying. It feels to me, people, like what is happening at Christmas is more improv than a play. In a play, the script is written line for line. The producer has rehearsed the entire scene with the actors. There is a right and a wrong way to handle the scene depending on the way it was written. But when it's improv, we know only the plot. What we actually say and do or won't do in a situation is up to us. And the story writes itself while the actors do improv. Are you still there? Now, some of the rules of improv are that spontaneity is not randomness. What appears to be random is actually the result of actors that know each other very well, and they've rehearsed even backstage, though they didn't know this particular story. You still there? Another one of the rules is that whatever a person says to you or does in the play is called an offer. If they say something, if they do something, if they make a facial expression, if they just sit there in silence, their actions, their words is called an offer to the other person. And when a person makes an offer in a gesture or in a statement, you have one of two things you can do. Either A, you accept that offer, which means you absorb it. You respond in a way that validates what that person has just said, and then you play off of it. Or B, you block it. You say, that's impossible. you say, I'm not playing anymore. So if someone says to you in improv, bang, you're dead. To play off of it is to flop over. To block it is to say, no, bang, you're dead. You see what you're doing? You're resisting it and you're trying to override it. If someone says to you, you will conceive and bear a child, you are free to say, how can this be? That's accepting. But you cannot say, no, I will not have a child. That's to block it. You cannot say, that's it, I quit, I'm not playing anymore. You've blocked it. Let me tell you why this is important. Because if both things are true, God is in control and so are other people, then it means sometimes you and I are caught in a vortex of events that seem random and chaotic. And every time something happens to us that we don't believe is part of God's plan, you try to reconcile in your head, I want to believe that God is in control, but my life is getting harder and not easier. How can this be? I want to believe that God is in control, but these people over here, they're making decisions that are affecting my life. This process is too slow and it's too arduous. And if God is in control, why does it seem to me like no one is in control? If God is in control, then why do I feel so invisible? So you go home on a day like Christmas and you think God is in control for somebody else, not you. Christian, listen to me. The message is almost over. Despite how you feel this morning about situations you had nothing to do with, God is in control. He may not have handed anyone a script, but the plot has been determined. And there is only one story. Your temptation right now, as things swirl out of control in your life, is to pull back from God and wonder if you can trust Him. I'm calling you to lean into God and learn how to play off of it. Once you get over the initial argument with God, this is unfair, that's not right, they don't have the power to do that to me. And you will have that moment. Once you get past that moment, you will have to ask yourself, what next? Not why. What next? What is the right play? What's the right move? Now that God has offered this situation into the story that is my life, do I accept it? Do I play off of it? Do I validate it? Do I say I don't like it, but it is now part of my story? Or do I block it? Do I complain about it? Do I think, oh, I know how this is going to end, and pick up the pen and write the ending. Let's just end it now. I'm not playing anymore. Sometime between now and next Christmas, people or God Himself will make offers. And I'm not saying you'll like them all. But God will bring things into the story that you don't think belongs there and you don't think are fair. And after you get to the point where you can't reconcile it anymore, you'll just figure out we have to find a new way. We have to find, learn how to walk with God now that this is part of our story. Are you there? This morning, as we come to the table, we are not coming, at least in my mind, church, we are not coming as a reenactment of the cross. We're coming as an invitation into a story of a God you can trust. No matter how long and arduous the process is, and no matter how long you've waited, and no matter how adversarial the other players are, you can trust him. Even if you're tired and you can't make sense of this, after you've got past the injustice of it, you have to decide you can trust him. So this morning, as we come to the table, what we're receiving, I hope, is an invitation into the story. The story that is God's. The lines, the parts are moving with every offer. And the story is changing. But it's not getting worse, Christian. God is using every decision of others, every overreach in power, every slow and tedious process God uses and weaves it in to the story of the church. And you belong to that.